all the mainstream media doesn't report correctly.
Who's your preferred media?
Fox.
So that's been the media, the conservatives, the go-to media for conservatives for more than two decades now. They get all of their information from Fox News. And we know that there are these outfits out there, these media outfits, Alex Jones and, of course, right-wing radio, of course, Fox. But nobody really thought about how powerful social media was going to be during 2016. So year after year, these social media sites become more and more powerful. Somebody at Twitter shut down Donald Trump's Twitter account for 11 minutes. Think about that. America was great again, but only for 11 minutes. And what came out of that was hundreds of headlines. Oh my God, someone shut down his account for 11 minutes. Wait a minute. The last president didn't even tweet. And it's a story, it's a freaking headline when he loses his Twitter account for 11 minutes. This is the kind of thing that we're dealing with right now. I'm not going to talk a lot about the Facebook thing, but suffice it to say this. I've got a ton of articles here, but here's what you need to do. You need to Google. There's a story over at Salon where they've got screenshots and descriptions of, you know, of some of these Russian-backed accounts and Russian-backed memes. And I looked through what they had, and I did not like or share any of that particular stuff, but there was some of it that I could have very easily done so, because there was some Black Lives Matter stuff and there was some anti-Trump stuff. But I don't do a lot with that stuff on social media because I realize that there's not going to be a great outcome from it. I mean, me liking or sharing something isn't going to change things. And of course, prior to the election, the Russians were helping Donald Trump out for sure. But as soon as Donald Trump won, they started putting out Facebook ads attacking Donald Trump. So it seems that the point may be not to help Donald Trump because they think that he's so effing fantastic, but it may be to divide, to simply divide, divide and conquer. The same plan that the GOP has had for years for the entire United States, divide and conquer, divide and conquer. And it would also explain the polls now where conservatives say that they don't mind. Oh, they're cool with it. They don't mind that Russia interfered because they got their candidate. So it would make sense that they would say that, because if the policy of the GOP leadership for years has been to divide and conquer, and then Russia tries to divide and conquer, well, that would only make sense. And then now Donald Trump as president is continuing to divide. But wait, that might be coming to an end soon. Maybe sooner than we think. This week, Robert Mueller unsealed indictments against three people. So you've got Gates. That seems like a big one. You've got Manafort. That's a really big one. But Papadopoulos, this guy that nobody had ever heard of. Papadopoulos, that's actually the one that you should be paying attention to. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Fire You Can't Put Out, episode number 226. My name is Melvin, and I want to thank you so much for being here. So, after Mueller unsealed the indictments, this was how Sarah Huckabee Sanders opened up the press briefing.
I'd like to start the briefing today by addressing a topic that I know all of you are preparing to ask me about. And that's tax reform.
Which, obviously, nobody had tax reform on the brain, but she, right out of the gate, was just trying to shift everybody's focus, because that's what her job is. And so, then she goes on, for about 20 minutes, talking about tax reform. Nobody cares about The polls are not with the GOP on this one. The polls are not with the president on this one. The polls are not with Sarah Huckabee Sanders on tax policy. And then as soon as she shuts the hell up about tax policy, then the real questions come in.
Today's announcement has nothing to do with the president, has nothing to do with the president's campaign or campaign activity. The real collusion scandal, as we've said several times before, has everything to do with the Clinton campaign, Fusion GPS, and Russia.
Oh my goodness. So this is the line that they have decided to go with. The real collusion is the Clintons because there's this uranium story. Let me talk with you about the uranium story.
There was a Russian spy who was getting close to Hillary Clinton. This was reported in the mainstreams. You have Bill Clinton,
We're not going to get derailed, but I want to ask you a couple fact-based questions.
Sure.
Okay, so this is Joanna Kearns versus Joy Reid, and this is a fantastic clip. So this is how you know that Robert Mueller is doing some good work. This is also how you know that Robert Mueller is getting awfully close. So Jen Kearns, I used to see her when Tom Hartman had a television show. I used to see her on Tom Hartman's panel all the time. And she's a female, works for the Washington Examiner, if I'm not mistaken. And she's reliably conservative, and she's very happy to get out there with the talking points. Have you ever noticed how when it comes to the GOP, they all speak with the same mouth? They all walk in lockstep. One might even say goose-step. Their heart beats to the exact same rhythm. Although they share, clearly, they share independent bodies, which is to say they don't have one physical form. So how the hell does this stuff get out there? Well, this is the refocus. There are any number of focus groups and, you know, media outfits that just all they do is just come up with this stuff all day. They look at the news and they say, oh my God, oh, the news looks bad for the GOP, because the news looks bad for the GOP every effing day. But they say, ah, here's how we're going to change the narrative. We're going to say this about that and this about that. And oh, the Russia thing, man, Mueller's getting close. So what can we say about... So they start digging through old news stories and they go, oh, this uranium story happened while Hillary Clinton was Secretary of State. Now, don't mind. So think about this, the Niger thing, right? These four soldiers that just died. Nobody's going after our current Secretary of State because it doesn't have anything to do with it. So the thing with Hillary Clinton is they go, oh, this thing happened while she was Secretary of State, or this thing happened while Barack Obama was president. Go after them. And that was a uranium deal that had nothing to do with Hillary Clinton. But this is the way they've decided to refocus it, because they go, the real scandal is something that Hillary Clinton did. But it is not. And if you listen to this exchange between Jen Kearns and Joy Reid, you'll understand exactly what I mean.
Who got the money when the Canadian company was sold to the Russian company, the uranium one? Who received the money?
I presume the company, but look.
Yeah, okay, there. Second question. Mm-hmm. Who approved the sale? Because when any sort of uranium or any company that sells sort of sensitive type products, and by the way, the uranium that's mined in these mines, right,
yep,
is for nuclear power. It's not for nuclear bombs, right? But when that happens, there is an organization called CFIUS that approves it. Do you know what CFIUS stands
yes,
for?
Yes, absolutely.
What does it stand for?
Committee on Foreign Investment in the United States.
How many people sit on that committee?
9 members.
How many have to approve a deal like this?
All 9 of them,
members.
I believe.
How many
absolutely
approved this deal?
9 of them.
Did Hillary Clinton sit personally on that deal?
No, but she
did
pushed
not. She would have had to strong arm 8 other people in order to get them to unanimously approve the deal, and ultimately the President of the United States would intervene if they saw any problem. The CFIUS people say now, if that deal came before them today, they would still approve it unanimously. There's actually nothing about the deal that's controversial. The only reason we're talking about it is because, per your even admission, which I think is very honest, the RNC would like us to be talking about this now.
Hillary Clinton is not running for anything. Hillary Clinton is likely never going to run for anything ever again. And so that panel she was talking about, CFIUS, said that if this came before them today, remember, Hillary Clinton's out of power, not running for anything. If this deal came before them today, they would still approve this deal. Well, clearly that's Hillary Clinton's fault. Okay, so Paul Manafort, Rick Gates, And so Rick Gates worked for Paul Manafort during the campaign. By the way, Paul Manafort did what he did for the campaign, and he's got close ties to Russia. He did what he did for the campaign for no money. He didn't receive an income. He did it for free. And you go, oh, well, he's one of the millionaire friends of Donald Trump, and perhaps he just wants to make America great. Wow. He had a chance to make America great, and he didn't. So the president comes out. Sarah Huckabee Sanders comes out and goes, all this stuff happened. And here's the talking point. Fox News, InfoWars, all this stuff happened before he became president, before the campaign and all this other. And I was listening to Tom Hartman earlier this week, and he got a dozen or so calls of people that just got on the air to spread that talking point. That's it. They just wanted to get on the air and spread that talking point. Now, I'll listen to his show all the time, and I'll hear next to no right-wing callers. But when he does have right-wing callers, he pushes them to the front, you know, because he wants that conversation, like Melvin does. I want that conversation. He wants that conversation, and so he puts these people on the air automatically. And most days, I don't hear any, or I'll hear one or two. But I would hear about half a dozen to a dozen a day. And I go, ugh, the effort is out there. All of these think tanks in Washington, they're having, and he's the biggest progressive talk show in the nation. Perhaps someday Melvin will be. And so they get on his show and they spread these talking points. These think tanks, they sat around, they came up with these things, and then they sometimes people are paid. And this is easy to verify, paid to go on the air to help spread this stuff. So they all get around and they all start saying, oh, Papadopoulos was a coffee boy. Have you heard that? He was a low level. He was a coffee boy. He never. In an interview during 2016 to the Washington Post, they asked Donald Trump. I didn't pull the audio for this. I'll just tell you about it. They asked him, who are your most important policy advisors? Ah, and he starts running down the list. Number one, number two, number three. And then he said, Papadopoulos. He mentioned Papadopoulos' name as one of his most important foreign policy advisors. And now they're going, oh, pish posh, he is nothing more than a coffee boy. And Paul Manafort did this stuff before he started working for me, which is half true, because he did it before he worked with you, but he's also doing it now. Quoting here from The Guardian, Papadopoulos joined Trump's campaign early in March 2016. Days later, he spoke to an unnamed Trump advisor who spelled out the campaign principal foreign policy objective, an improved U.S. relationship with Russia, which doesn't sound all that bad. A week later, Papadopoulos flew to Rome, where he bumped into a London-based professor of diplomacy from a Mediterranean country. The professor, identified by the Washington Post as Joseph Mifsud, claimed to have substantial connections with Russian government officials. Then, on the 31st of March, Papadopoulos took part in a meeting in Washington with Trump, the Republican frontrunner, and his national security team. He was pictured seated four chairs away from the candidate. Papadopoulos made an interesting pitch. According to the FBI, he told those seated around the table that he could broker a groundbreaking meeting between Putin and Trump. A coffee boy, indeed. What does the coffee boy do at your office?
The press makes me more uncivil than I am. You know, people don't understand. I went to an Ivy League college. I was a nice student. I did very well. I'm a very intelligent person.
So the story here, or the narrative, has been to go back to the media. Clearly, this is all the media's fault. The media, whether they are Fox News, which is clearly in this guy's, it's become a channel for him, to cover him, to defend him all day, every day. That's really all Fox is. And it's kind of always been, but for the GOP in the macro sense, and now for the president in a more micro sense. And with respect to the rest of the media, that does not have a clear conservative bias, they have been giving him exactly what he wants. Lots and lots of TV time anytime he does something absolutely stupid. You and I'm imagining, if you're not a conservative, you and I tend to roll our eyes at this stuff. Oh my God, they're just so stupid. What are they doing covering him like this? is this really how you cover a president and call yourself a news organization? And by the way, I want to let you know that you're not alone. I'm out of Portland, Oregon. And Lars Larson was on one of our local television channels, KGW8. And he's talking with Laurel Porter about how he's going to go to Washington, D.C. and he's going to talk to them. No, you're not. You're going to Washington, D.C. to fillet the president on the radio. That's what you're doing. You're not going there to get the answers and do the hard news. And shut up. You guys wear the same damn white pointy hood. You ain't fooling anybody, Lars Larson. So he goes there and fillets him on the radio, fine. But over Fox News, not every conservative or conservative outlet is really all that jazzed with the way they have to cover this guy. All of these conservative outlets, now that we have a conservative House, conservative Senate, conservative president, and increasingly conservative courts, there are folks inside these organizations that don't necessarily want to toe the line anymore. They're sick of lying. And even at Fox News, the eye rolls were many, and they were hard. So this, from CNN, some employees at Fox News were left embarrassed and humiliated by their network's coverage of the latest revelations in special counsel Robert Mueller's investigation into Russian election meddling, according to conversations CNN had with several individuals placed throughout the network. "I'm watching now and screaming," said one Fox News personality in a text message to CNN as the person watched their own network's coverage. He texted back, "I want to quit." He probably won't quit. There's a lot of money. If you're willing to lie, there's a lot of money. This show could have a lot of money if I were willing to lie, especially for Donald Trump. I'm not willing to lie. It is another blow to journalists at Fox News. I know it sounds like an oxymoron. Who come in every day wanting to cover the news in a fair and objective way. One senior Fox News employee told CNN that their outlet's coverage, adding that there were many eye rolls in the newsroom over how the news was covered. The person said Fox feels like an extension of the Trump White House. Yes. Oh, yes, it is. You had to know that when you were going in there. My God, nobody jumps into a pool and then pops their head out and goes, "Oh, my God, I'm wet." You knew what you were getting into. The employee spoke to CNN on the condition of anonymity because they were not authorized to speak publicly on the matter. A Fox News spokesperson told CNN that the network covered the breaking news accurately and fairly across both news and opinion programming. Right.
Russian President Vladimir Putin says President Trump's opponents don't allow him to fulfill his election promises. Asked if Russia is annoyed with Trump's unpredictability, Putin said it's linked to a strong resistance inside the country. Putin is also warning Moscow would retaliate immediately if Washington restricts the operations of Russian news outlets in the United States.
Putin has told us that, and with everything that we know about Russia now, if you restrict our outlets, and RT is one of those outlets, if you restrict our outlets inside the United States, there will be trouble. Oh, yes, there will be trouble. Because we need to continue feeding propaganda to your people. And Fox News, conservative talk radio, they're all too happy to help spread that propaganda. It's insane to me that when we had President Obama, when Obama was president, they would have pictures of Obama with the hammer and the sickle and, my God, he's a Soviet and all this other stuff. And now they're in bed with the Russians. I understand how they get to get away with this crap. And everybody just goes, "Yep, it's just the way it is. This is all right. I'm cool with this. Yeah, it's fine." Hillary Clinton was Secretary of State when four soldiers died in Benghazi. That's four Americans died in Benghazi. She was Secretary of State at the time. It's clearly her fault. It had absolutely nothing to do with her. But she has to go to prison. She has to go to prison because she's using a private server. Got to go to prison using a private server. Trump's using a private server. Lots of people in his White House are using a private server. And Trump is even using a phone that's connected to a larger network, which is a security risk because it's the president's phone and it could be hacked into. He's supposed to only have a phone that only connects to a very narrow network of White House people. But he tweets out to the larger world. And he does that by connecting to the larger network. If his phone got hacked, somebody could start tweeting as him and could honestly start World War III. But he doesn't really care about national security. And so therefore, he's a conservative hero. Hillary has to go to prison, but he's a conservative hero. So this from The Hill, poll, headline, vast majority of Trump voters say he should stay in office even if Russia collusion is proven. Nearly 80% of Trump voters say they think the president should stay in office even if collusion is proven between his campaign and Russia. According to a survey released Tuesday, yeah, that's this last Tuesday, even while support among all voters for his impeachment hits a new high. We may get impeachment. According to a new poll from the Democratic-leaning firm Public Policy Polling, the PPP, 79% of people who voted for President Trump say that he should remain, even if collusion is proven, and 75% say that the entire Russia story is fake news. What they hear on Alex Jones, oh my God, that's real. And how do you sheeple not know about this? But the Russia story, which has been proven and is being further proven every day, fake news.
I want to play the role of ombudsman for a second. Why on a news network do we televise the press conference of the press spokesman talking to reporters? That is not news. That is propaganda. It's almost disinformation. And we watched it for 15 or 20 minutes. That is not enlightening our viewers. That is somebody not telling the truth and trying to think of an interesting way to tell it, as opposed to a president who just prevaricates. So that's my little editorial about
that. You'll have to take that up with management. I don't make those decisions.
Maybe they're listening.
So let me paint the picture for you. That is Rick Stengel sitting in over at MSNBC, a supposedly liberal network. And he's sitting at the table, and there is a host, and there's a couple of other commentators. There's about half a dozen people total sitting around the table. And they're having a discussion, and then they cut to a press conference. And they show it unedited and without any commentary, any editorial. And then they go back to their panel, and they all start talking again. And Rick Stengel says, hold up, I'm sorry, I just have to say something. Showing that and providing no context, no commentary, you as a news organization doing that, that's a form of propaganda. Yeah, it's sort of low level, I suppose, because you're just letting people decide for themselves. But when people watch the news, I mean, I suppose we could just flip on the White House cameras and watch it ourselves. But when the news networks show it, and Sarah Huckabee Sanders is telling us what she wants us to think, the president is telling us what he wants us to think, and they're providing no context to it whatsoever, or even any sort of fact-checking, yes, that in and of itself, that is a form of propaganda. Rick Stengel called him out, and as you hear the lady say there at the end, she has to laugh it off. You have to take that up with management. Because what is she going to say? Her paycheck depends on her defending her own network. And it's got to be tough. Rupert Murdoch owns tons of media outlets. And I think total, he owns more than half of the media outlets in the world. And that's freaking scary. Because he is a right-wing billionaire who's only trying to advance the interests of billionaires around the world. And he realizes that the way to do that, to change what people think. How do you change what people think? You get into their media. You get into the popular culture, which he does with Fox television. You get into, you know, books, which, I mean, all these current conservatives that write books, please, go to hell. Half these guys don't even know how to read, I'm sure. And then, of course, with your newspaper, you know, your newspapers, your internet media. So he owns the Wall Street Journal. And I remember when this came up, I said, that is never going to happen. He's never going to own the Wall Street Journal. It's this old American institution. People trust the Wall Street Journal. He's not going to own the Wall Street Journal. Then he owned the Wall Street Journal. Okay, Melvin's not right all the time, but that time, that was definitely one of those times where I definitely wasn't right. But with Trump, with leading up to Trump becoming president, and even once Trump was president, some of the folks that work over at Wall Street Journal, I'll think about those Fox employees I was talking about earlier that are just sick of working at Fox because they're just rolling their eyes at how clearly this is propaganda. There were a few folks that decided to go ahead and tell the truth over at the Wall Street Journal. And that has begun sort of going back, like backsliding. There, and the Wall Street Journal has now become another propaganda outlet for the White House. And now all of Rupert Murdoch's media outlets, all of them, including the Wall Street Journal, are all saying exactly and only what he wants them to say. And I probably shouldn't be surprised, and I suppose I'm not to a large degree, but when that kind of thing happens, so when he bought the Wall Street Journal, but the Wall Street Journal was sometimes still critical of conservatives, I said, okay, they've never been independent. They've always been a little bit conservative, but it's the type of conservatism where they were still willing to say what they thought and not speak with one mouth and walk in lockstep and goose step with the same heartbeat. But his outlet has now, this particular outlet, which wasn't ever liberal, but was still trying to maintain some semblance of thoughtfulness or independence, has now went ahead and joined all of his other outlets, and they're only saying what Rupert Murdoch wants them to say. And this makes people less likely to trust the media. But that's going to work out for conservatives as well. Well, except in at least one instance. So another poll from The Hill. According to a survey from Public Policy Polling, voters trust ABC, NBC, CBS, CNN, The New York Times, and The Washington Post, which are like the Dirty Six to Donald Trump. They trust those outlets way more than they trust Trump. These six media companies, which are frequently targeted by him, are trusted way more than he is. NBC and CBS and ABC saw the greatest edge over Trump, with 54% saying that they trust those outlets more than him, only 36% saying that they trust Trump more. The New York Times beat out Trump in a voter trust by a 17-point margin, 54 to 37. The Washington Post and CNN came in at about 15% lead over Trump, 52% of respondents saying that they trusted those outlets more than Trump. The survey was conducted among 572 voters from October 27th to 29th with a margin of error of 4.1 points. So people are still turning to these good news outlets where, as the old saying goes, there's no such thing as bad press. So when he starts barking about CBS and CNN, the Washington Post, the New York Times, they're garbage, they're failing, they're clearly not. They're trusted more than you, and you are approaching impeachment.
Now I want to say something very important to you about this issue of morality in government. It is just as immoral to use the lawmaking power of the government to enrich the few at the expense of the many as it is to steal money from the public treasury. That is stealing money from the public treasury. Legislation that favored the greed of monopoly and the trickery of Wall Street was a form of corruption that did the country four times as much harm as Teapot Dome ever did. Private selfish interests are always trying to corrupt the government in this way. Powerful financial groups are always trying to get favors for themselves. Now, the Democratic administration has been fighting against these efforts to corrupt the powers of government. We haven't always won, but we have never surrendered, and we never will.
So Truman, when he was giving his DNC acceptance speech, and I think it was 1949, it's about a 25-minute video. You can find it over on YouTube. I don't expect you to look it up. I'm just going to go in. It's one of my favorite speeches. I'm going to go in and just clip the whole thing one of these days and just play you clips from that speech. You know, a little here, a little there, just give you, because what has happened, even over the last 70 years, things that happened decades before I was born, the fights that I'm having now, the fights that you're having now, are the exact same fights that we've been having for the last 100 years or so. When the Republican Party was started as a reform party in 1856, Abraham Lincoln was their first nominee. That was a good party. And the Democratic Party at that time was the party of the South. That was the slavery party. That was the Dixiecrat party. Conservatives like to do this thing where they go, you're the KKK people. It's your history. You're the one that hates the blacks. Well, the parties change. Yeah, the Republicans used to be the Reform Party, closer to the Party of the People. But that was over 150 years ago. And the Democrats were the Party of the South, which is crazy to call yourself a Democrat, but you don't, but you believe in slavery. That's insane. And these parties switch spots with some frequency, which is why I prefer the term progressive, because progressive is always going to mean the same thing. And if you're a conservative, you can say that you're a conservative. Democrat, Republican, those parties change objectives over time. Not all the time, but certainly over time. And what the Republican Party is pushing right now is a tax cut for billionaires. One of the big things you've probably heard about right now is that you, a middle-class person, and middle-class is defined as an individual making roughly $50,000. Let's just numbers sake. They say, you're going to get back $4,000. Right? You're middle-class, you're going to get back $4,000. $100,000 for a couple. So you get back $8,000. You're going to get back $4,000. If you're middle class, you're going to get back $4,000. You've probably heard it. There's ads running all over the country right now saying you should support the president's plan because you're going to get back $4,000. So the tax plan was just released this past Thursday, and the show is fairly current. And it turns out, and media outlets are still going through it, they say there's going to be a simplification of the tax plan. Simplification. You're going to be able to do your taxes on a postcard. Won't that be great? No, that doesn't sound great. See, because I itemize. I'm a business owner. And so it doesn't sound awesome to me. I don't necessarily like how complicated they are. But I don't think that your oversimplification is really going to cut it either. So now the media outlets are digging into this. It turns out that the GOP thinks middle class is $550,000 roughly. You're making $550,000. You're middle class. And if you're middle class, you're going to get back $4,000. And everybody is clearly middle class. So when you dig into things like that, the simplification of the tax code is what they call it. Simplification. And it's a 450-page bill. I mean, boy, that sure sounds simple. I imagine any day now, somebody will walk out onto the floor after they have printed it out. They will hold it high above their head, and then they will drop it on the desk in front of them, and the thud will strike terror in the hearts of everybody around them, and oh my God, look how gigantic it is. This is what they did with the healthcare bill. Look how gigantic it is. When Ben Carson was running for president, I remember him saying, all legislation, one page. Everything is going to be one page long. One page, because I'm Ben Carson, and I hate reading. And here you go. Here's their 450-page tax bill.
We are following breaking news. Just over half an hour ago, the House of Representatives narrowly approved a $4 trillion budget.
A huge win. The vote was 216 to 212, with 20 Republicans voting no. There were no Democratic yes votes, not a surprise. The vote clears a key hurdle toward the president's goal of cutting taxes.
So MSNBC, doing what they do, covering the gigantic news. But oh my God, they just got this thing passed, and doesn't it look wonderful? Let's get somebody from the GOP on to talk about this tax bill. And the guy that they decided to get on is both a House member. His name is Jim Renacci, and he's from Ohio, and he's also an accountant. And they go, if anybody's going to be good with explaining this tax bill to us, it's going to be somebody who's there, who helped craft it, and who is also an accountant. And they're not going to be able to BS us because, see, this is Ali Velshi and Stephanie Ruhle. And they are the economics people. They're the money people on MSNBC. And they go, well, we'll get the three of us on. People are really going to be able to understand this. And they talk about it a little bit. And things are fairly, you know, they're nice. But, you know, they're being diplomatic to each other. And then Jim Renacci starts pulling this crap that the GOP always pulls, and that's where things go sideways.
This tax plan is to cut taxes for middle Americans, not the wealthy.
But that's not really what the studies show, right? We've looked at a whole lot. We don't have enough information, and we'd like to get it, and hopefully we're going to get it next week. But actually, everything we're indicating is that the top 1% get 80% of the benefit out of this tax plan right now.
Well, and I just don't agree with that. The problem is, and again, it's semantics, because if you take business taxes, if you take pass-throughs, yep, and you take corporations taxes, pass-throughs are going on a personal tax return. That's a business tax. When you reduce that tax, of course it's going to end up looking like the 1%, but it's just not true. When you just take a look at taxpayers in general, Americans who pay on their personal income tax, take away the business side of it, you're going to see that the goal here is to get middle American taxpayers with less taxes so that they
can take
more homes.
Congressman, that's an interesting way to do that. That's a little bit like saying if you just take away the fact that I don't have hair, I'm not really bald.
No, because... Here's the other thing, though. I got to explain it to you. Business is business, and we need to be able to compete. We have the highest tax rate
okay,
in the world.
No, we don't, sir. Come on.
You got to start saying it. You know that full well, right? You know, I'm sure you have corporate clients.
Let's pull it up.
That you don't have a single corporate client that pays a 35% statutory business rate, right?
And, sir, the fact that you're a CPA, you talk about people don't go through standard itemized deductions. Corporations
all do.
We can look at the statutory rate all day long, but if you find me a Fortune 500 company, who, by the way, their stocks are soaring, that pay that rate, I will eat my hat.
So, there we go. And it started going sideways for them. And he's middle class. And this is the thing that's being thrown out there. So here's where we're at. Donald Trump is looking at impeachment, or at the very least, the implementation, the usage of the 25th Amendment. So one or the other. It's very unlikely that he's going to serve out his term. He didn't announce, but it leaked out this week that he does not plan on running for re-election. But wait a minute. He's got a re-election committee. He set it up and he's been fundraising off of it since the day after his inauguration. He registered the day after his inauguration to run for president again, to run for re-election in 2020. GOP would run nobody. So nobody's really gearing up right now on the GOP side to run for president in 2020. And then it leaks out that he's not going to run. But wait a minute. He's still got this committee and he's still raising money. I think he realizes that his days are numbered, that his time is short. Everything that he's done as president is only to enrich himself. He goes to his own restaurant, buys his own products, goes to his own golf resort, makes the Secret Service pay for golf carts so that they can follow him around. We've spent, as taxpayers, hundreds of thousands of dollars for the Secret Service to ride in golf carts at the Trump Resort in order to protect the president. Everything he's done is to enrich himself. This tax cut, it's only to enrich him. And it's a gigantic Christmas present to him on his way out of the White House. There's no other way to look at this. So, when he was running for president, he said that one of the things that makes him a top-notch, smart, and expert is he went to the Wharton School. The Wharton School of Finance. And there's any number of stories out there you can read about how he got into such a prestigious school when he clearly doesn't have two thoughts to rub together. But we're not going to cover that part. He did go to the Wharton School of Finance, and so that's what we're going to cover. And the Wharton School of Finance decided to release their analysis of his tax plan. And there's a clip out there rolling around of him saying, I'm like a smart person. And he was saying that, just like this clip I played earlier where he called himself intelligent. He says that because he went to the Wharton School. And so he loves the Wharton School. He talks about it whenever he can because, oh my God, he's so smart. He went to the Wharton School. Fine. He went to the Wharton School. So Wharton comes out with their analysis of his tax plan, and they go, nope. I'm surprised he's not talking about this. Not really. So quoting here, the study released Monday by the University of Pennsylvania's Wharton School found that the proposed GOP tax plan would increase the deficit by $1 trillion to $3.5 trillion over the course of the first 10 years. By 2040, the plan would cost between $2 trillion and $10.6 trillion. According to the GOP budget approved last week, the Republican tax plan is only allotted $1.5 trillion to add to the deficit before violating the reconciliation rules that would allow the Senate to fast-track the bill with 51 votes instead of 60. So, and the analysis goes on, and it says it's all going to the super wealthy, It's going to absolutely nobody on the bottom. And then, of course, the article goes on to punch holes in his $4,000 lie. They go, that's not a thing either. And as you caught there, at the end of what I read, it said that they're going to add X number of dollars to the deficit. Now, wait a minute. It's a deficit hawk. That's what we hear about all the time. It's the whole two Santa Claus thing. He scream about deficits all the time. Why the hell are they adding to the deficit?
These Republican gentlemen can't have it both ways. They can't be for morality on Tuesday and Thursday, and then be for special privileges for their clients on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday.
But that's exactly what they're doing. See, the other group that's going to get a lot out of this tax cut for billionaires are the billionaire Koch brothers. The billionaire Koch brothers, they own most of the think tanks that come up with all these talking points. When the GOP marches to the same drum, says all the exact same things, what they're doing is they're following talking points that are come up with at Koch organizations, Koch brothers think tanks. And the deficit talk that we hear all the time from politicians and in ads and in mailers that show up to our house during election year about how we can't increase the deficit because we're just passing down debt to our children. Remember that talking about passing on all this debt to our children? Well, now that the GOP is in power, per the two Santa Claus theory, they've said, you know what? Don't worry about the deficits. It's not a problem. And the Koch brothers, through these think tank organizations, have now been running ads in quite a few states saying about, as I was talking about earlier, why you, Mr. and Mrs. Middle Class, you should be supporting the tax plan. So this from The Intercept, the headline, Koch Brothers Internal Strategy Memo on Selling the Tax Cuts. Ignore the deficit. Three words, ignore the deficit. The billionaire brothers, Charles and David Koch, spent much of the 8 years of the Obama presidency stoking fears about the budget deficit. Their political network aired an unending cascade of campaign advertisements against Democratic politicians, sponsored several national bus tours. Remember, this is who started the Tea Party, and paid organizers in communities across the country to mobilize public demonstrations, all of it focused on the dangers of increasing the deficit. One such ad even warned that the government debt would lead to a Chinese takeover of America, which for many voters is a concern linked to debt. Another effort, also quietly bankrolled by the Koch network, used Justin Bieber memes on social media to try to reach millennials about too much government borrowing. Too bad for them, they don't know how people really feel about the Biebs. The Intercept obtained a message from the Koch brothers network on how to sell tax reform legislation. The memo went out to members of the network of like-minded Republican donors, which includes dozens of wealthy investors and business executives. The talking point suggested that the backers of the tax cuts feel vulnerable to the charge that the tax cuts will jack up the deficit. In case it is helpful to you in your own discussions with lawmakers and others, the memo begins, below is a list of talking points that addresses some of the key hurdles of passing tax reform this year. Right there. Here are some key talking points. Here's what you can use. I would love to debate conservative, not just in person, not just on these airwaves. But one of my concerns is when I am provided with this opportunity is the BS talking points that fly out of their mouths. I'm not hearing their own thoughts. I'm hearing talking points. And that's one of the frustrating things. I want to know what they really think. What happens in their brain when they hear about certain policies, certain things. I want to know what people really think. And talking points, I hate them. Because I'm not hearing what you think. I'm hearing what somebody told you to think. And for those of you that are concerned about government mind control, you shouldn't let people control your minds. But here it is. The Kochs are going to put these talking points out. GOP politicians are going to help spread them on not just conservative-owned media, but on CNN and MSNBC as well. And the talking point goes like this. Avoid getting distracted on revenue neutrality. Economic growth increases revenues. Some Republican senators have expressed concern over supporting comprehensive tax reform that adds to short-term deficits. Though we fully appreciate these concerns, the long-term economic growth that would result from the first comprehensive tax reform in a generation would help to offset short-term deficits over the time. Aha! That was the result of the Kennedy and Reagan tax reforms. There's no reason that this time will be any different. Now, actually, the Kennedy thing is not... The conservatives love to bring up the Kennedy thing. Kennedy, yeah, he cut taxes, but he got rid of loopholes. That was how his tax cuts provided a plus in the economy, was getting rid of the loopholes. Conservatives love to go, yeah, he cut taxes. I wish you Democrats were like him because he cut taxes. Yeah, but he got rid of loopholes, which increased the amount of money that the Treasury gets. And actually, the Reagan thing is a flat-out effing lie. There has been a Reagan legacy project that's been going on, not just since Reagan was president, but even in his post-presidency, pushing this idea that the Reagan tax cuts worked. And no, they didn't. And if you were alive 30 years ago, and I was, and not paying attention, but for those of you that were paying attention or were teachers or any of that, you guys know that that stuff did not happen. But we believe that that stuff happened because conservative outlets have been pushing that lie for years about how, you know, you guys should be more like Kennedy and his tax cuts and Reagan cut taxes, and it just exploded. The country was, we were just dancing. It wasn't the roaring 20s. It was the roaring 80s. No, it wasn't. It's a lie. And they're saying, hey, the short-term deficits don't matter because in the long term, you're all going to get peed on. Excuse me. Sorry. There's going to be a trickle-down effect because you're all going to get some money if we just give more money to the rich people. A trickle-down nation creates a nation of peons.
People who think that they are going to be more prosperous by cutting their taxes ought to take a look at the fact that the most prosperous parts of our country are the ones with the highest income tax and sales tax. For instance, New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, and California have the highest tax rates in the country when you combine sales and income tax. I argue that they are probably the four most prosperous states in the country. If a government is to function, it must have tax income. And there is no prosperity when there are six wealthy people in a community and 1,000 poverty-stricken people. The six wealthy people get more wealth when the 1,000 people have enough income to support the businesses owned by the six people. Plus, I ask myself routinely, how damn much money do people need in order to live a comfortable life? My husband and I have a couple of million dollars, and we have plenty of money to pay our taxes, to be charitable, and to live very, very comfortably. I don't even know what people with $10 million, $100 million, $1 billion even do with that money. And God forsaken, the impact on the other people is so enormous that it frightens me, and I think it's an absolutely immoral proposal to cut the taxes of the 1% at the expense of the 99%. Not only that, we have to borrow the money to make up the difference. And I have read that China at this moment has over $1 trillion of our debt.
Right.
And that's a very scary thing in this kind of economic and political environment.
So that's Dr. Gail Furman appearing on the Tom Hartman radio program about a week or two ago. And she belongs to a group that I've talked about on this program before called the Patriotic Millionaires. And these are millionaires that believe that the taxes should go up on them. They have millions, but they realize that they don't want to be rich in a poor country. And they realize that the real way to get them more money is not by looting the treasury. It is by putting more money into the pockets of working people. So here is the talking point that is being trotted out by Republicans. And this isn't new. This gets trotted out every time we talk about tax reform. They go, the poor, pay no taxes. 50%. 50% of people pay no taxes whatsoever. All right, hold on. Yeah, there's a good percentage of people that don't pay income taxes because they are too poor. They come in below a certain economic level. But they pay lots and lots of taxes. And actually, as a percentage, they tend to pay more in taxes than do the wealthy. And so I'll hear conservatives say, wouldn't the better way to solve the problem was to be to make everybody pay their taxes? I agree, but the way you're talking about me people pay their taxes is not the same way I'm talking about getting people to pay their taxes. So everybody pays taxes. If you live in this country, you pay taxes. Even if you're homeless, if you get a little bit of money, you take that money to the store to buy something, there's either a hidden tax or a clear tax, like a sales tax on that. You still pay taxes. There's taxes everywhere. So everybody pays. So when you take all of those taxes in aggregate, this, according to the Pew Charitable Trust, the poor pay a higher percentage of income in taxes. According to a report released back in 2015, and they redo this report all the time, the lower one's income, the higher effective state and local tax rate. Combining all state and local income, property taxes, excise taxes that the Americans pay, the nationwide effective state and local tax rates by income group are 10.9% for the poorest 20%, 9.4% for the middle 20%, and 5.4% for the top 1%. So poor people, is an effective rate, a percentage, pay more, way more in taxes, roughly double the percentage in taxes that wealthy people pay. But this 450-page bill that is before Congress right now, which is Trump kind of trying to get himself something before he gets the hell out of there. This is the GOP trying to get the tax brothers something before they potentially get booted out next year. It's really nothing more, just a massive gift to themselves. And please don't believe the lies that are being told surrounding this particular thing. This has nothing to do with you and I. This has everything to do with them. And the folks, the people, the American people, they're on our side with this particular issue. And to my conservative friends out there, and I'm not going to criticize you, I want to say, you're not going to get anything out of this bill. Yeah, I understand quite a few of you would be happy if this passed because you think that there's something in it for you. But it's a lie. It's not for you. It's not for me. If you're a working person, you know, if you work 8 hours a day or longer, you know, and you live in a modest home and you drive a vehicle that's several model years old, this bill is not for you.
You know, Donald Trump went on television and said, believe me, whenever he says believe me, you can believe right. That he's not telling the truth. Believe me, I will not benefit one bit from this tax act. Oh, yeah? Well, how about the fact that the top income tax rate will drop from 39.6% to 35%? That's almost a 12% drop in the rate for his people, for his particular income bracket.
I want to get to one more thing before I get out of here. The arbitration rule, which I talked about passing a couple of weeks ago, and then Donald Trump stated his intention to sign it. Sherrod Brown, and you probably didn't see this, Sherrod Brown took the floor because he saw Mike Pence come in to the chamber. And he said, oh God, I know what Mike Pence is here for. He's here to do the work for the billionaires. Because it's pretty clear that this arbitration rule may not pass because this overturns our Seventh Amendment right. So it's probably not going to pass, and they probably need him here to break a tie.
Senator from Ohio.
President, the Vice President of the United States is here. It looks like Equifax and Wall Street and Wells Fargo will win again. The Vice President only shows up in this body when the rich and the powerful need him. Well, it's pretty clear tonight that Wall Street needs him. This vote will make the rich richer. It will make the powerful more powerful. Forced arbitration hurts the 3.5 million people who were defrauded by Wells Fargo. Forced arbitration hurts the 145 million Americans who were wronged by Equifax. $5 million in Ohio alone. It hurts employees who've been hurt by their employers. It hurts students who've been cheated by for-profit colleges. It hurts family members in nursing homes. It hurts the millions of Americans with student loan debt in credit cards. And I'll close with this, Mr. President. And I want every voting member of the Senate to look in the eyes, think of this, look in the eyes of the American Legion veterans who say a vote to overturn the CFPB arbitration rule is a vote against our military and against our veterans. Vote no. Mr. President, I yield back time on our side.
Wells Fargo, Equifax, celebrated. Bank of America, celebrated. When this was passed, they go, but hey, every time there's a class action lawsuit, and that's what this largely covers, every time there's a class action lawsuit, you get absolutely nothing. You get a couple bucks while the trial lawyers get everything. And it's not the point. The point is not to make you rich when you sue. It is to make an example of and change the behavior of these companies so that they will be less likely to do this. Yeah, they pay out millions. The lawyers get a bunch of it. And you get crumbs. But the point is to change their policy, to change what they do. And this landed on the president's desk and he gleefully signed it. So where do we go in this next week? We need to fight this so-called tax reform bill. And the group Indivisible is doing fantastic work on this right now. In just about anywhere you live in the country, there should be several Indivisible groups. Join what those groups are doing. Start calling your legislators. Start calling your senators. Start calling your House members. Try to call the White House. Yeah, I know they're not taking calls. Call their local offices. Call their DC offices. This thing has to be defeated because tax reform has absolutely nothing to do with us. Not this particular tax reform anyway. Get out there. Call your people. I don't have the ACR on my phone right now. I've got a new phone, so I'm going to have to put the ACR back on. I'm going to call my legislator. I'm going to try to record the call so that I can play it here on the air so you hear what it sounds like. And this is the fight that we need to have because they're saying that they want to get it done by Thanksgiving. But then the whole Russia thing happens. So now they're saying it's going to be by Christmas. And so the talking point is you're going to get a gigantic Christmas gift from the GOP. And no, you're not. They don't care about you. This is for Trump. This is for the Kochs. Trump's on his way out. He needs to get himself one more gigantic gift before he leaves. And we need to deny him that gift. Call your senators. Call your House members. You know, protest. Whatever it is. That's protesting. It's a little useless. Call your legislators. We have to make sure that this does not pass. And I promise you, mark my words, if tax reform does not pass, that is officially where the GOP and President Trump will become completely useless to the Koch network. And the Koch network, Kochtopus, is gigantic. And if the Koch network decides to cut them loose, they don't stand a chance in 2018, 2020, or really for the next decade. This could be the thing that brings down the entire GOP because this is what the Kochs want. This is what they've been fighting for years, cutting public programs and making themselves insanely wealthy. Not that they're not already insanely wealthy. And if the GOP can't get this done, and we can make sure that they don't get this done, if we do our part, it's a phone call. It doesn't even cost you any money. Don't sign petitions, you know, just call and hammer them and let them know that you're watching and make them afraid to cast that vote. And if we defeat them on taxes, we're going to defeat this entire administration. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for being here on The Fire You Can't Put Out. Our official home is tfycpo.podbean.com. Like us at facebook.com/tfycpo. You can listen on the go. Just download the Podbean app at the iTunes store or at the Google Play store for Android users. Individual episodes are available for download at the iTunes store or on Podbean. Just search for The Fire You Can't Put Out. Subscribe. You're never going to miss an episode of Melvin. Hello there. Questions, comments, hate mail is just a general statement or inquiry. You can email us at tfycpo@gmail.com. We work hard to not only inform and entertain, but also to keep an open dialogue with our growing listener base. So feel free to reach out to us. And as always, thank you for listening. We're the fire you can't put out, and we will prevail. Rejecting austerity in favor of prosperity. Special thanks to Kevin for producing. And thank you for listening. This is Melvin signing off. And now that I've woken you up, good morning.